Hello, folks. Thanks for being here today. We know that we have some great competitions going on right now. We have another session really good with Richard Hicks. And we appreciate you taking your time to be here with us today. Today, we're going to talk about private cloud security architecture, a solution for private cloud security. I hope you guys enjoy. We have a bunch of books that we're going to give away at the end based on questions. So just make sure that you are paying attention because you're going to ask questions, right?
We're going to ask you questions based on the talk. And if you give the right answer, we'll toss you a free book.
So my name is Yuri Diorgis. I'm a senior technical writer at Microsoft, server and cloud division information experience team.
And I'm Tom Schinder, and I'm a principal technical writer and knowledge engineer in the Microsoft Server and Cloud Division Information Experience Team, in the solutions team. And the current solution that we're trying to solve for is private cloud and private cloud security.
That's right. In our talk today, we have a lot of content to cover. We're probably going to use the whole time, and we're going to try to hold your questions to the end. Because it's a really dynamic, and we want to make sure that we follow the line of thinking. And the first thing that we're going to cover is about who is an architect, and if who here was on the Tonsinger's presentation yesterday. Okay, we see
so a few people were in the principal's talk. So we'll do that again for the folks that weren't at the principal's talk and talk about architecture a little bit, and then we'll move into the security.
That's correct. And then we go to some cloud insecure concerns. We know that one of the things that happen with you are planning or moving to the cloud is about security, and we want to make sure that you understand all the threat landscape and what you should do. Again, this is an independent vendor independent presentation. Although we are from Microsoft, we are trying to isolate the fact of we have a vendor behind us, and we're trying to make sure that we all understand what are the security concerns of private cloud. Then we move to key security difference in a private cloud security principles, and then we go to cloud security challenge secondary to essential characteristics.
That's right. If you were at the principal's talk, we talked about the five essential characteristics of cloud computing. If you weren't, I'll introduce them to you today.
And to finish, we go to the private cloud's reference model and secure model, so you have the complete solution and the complete planning. So we can start deploying our private cloud and making sure that you have secure as part of the planning as a foundation perspective, right? And Tom, what about this this agenda here? We're going to give away that as well?
No. So we're not going to give away the day planner, but the reason why I put the day planner there is to show that with the private cloud, we're essentially rebooting the data center, that we're going to start over and we're going to move into the 21st century and do computing the way we really wanted to do if we could in the 20th century. And in order to do that, we need a strong architectural foundation. So essentially, we're going to move from the day planner to an Outlook era.
Or even from the notepad.
Or even the notepad, that's right.
So what is an architect, Tom?
So what is an architect? It's a question I ask myself because, you know, I've been in infrastructure and operations for the last 15 years, same with Yuri, and we were able to solve a lot of problems being hired guns. And really never thought, why did I need an architect?
Right.
But when we joined this new team and thought about private cloud, all of a sudden, oh, okay, architect. Okay, I see.
It's not only to build houses.
Yeah, I thought an architect was building houses.
Yeah.
But actually, we need architects in a lot of different fields. But first thing I wanted to know is, what's in it for me? Why should I care about architecture, especially private cloud architecture? So we can see here a study from the Corporate Executive Board where they did a survey of CIOs and asked them, which categories of staff skills do you see first growing in importance and second having difficulty hiring or developing over the next 3 years? As you see here, 63% of these CIOs said that they see architecture as increasing in importance, and 47%, almost 50%, said they're having difficulty finding architects. And the reason for that is that this Gartner study shows that there's going to be increasing emphasis on architecture roles as we move into a cloud world, private cloud, public cloud, hybrid cloud, and that the job title of cloud architect is surfacing more and more, and I expect to see that increasing significantly in the next few years. And this is important because when we're planning our careers in the next 5 to 10 years, we have to think about there may be a contraction of up to 75% in the traditional infrastructure and operations jobs in IT.
So what's going to happen with those guys?
Well, some guys think that the jobs are going to disappear, but other guys say, no, that's not going to happen because the cloud is going to introduce new opportunities for cloud architects where the former infrastructure and operations people, a lot of the stuff that we do today, we're going to start affiliating with business units within the company and architecting solutions so that we become profit enablers and not cost centers as we are perceived now in IT. Does anybody, okay, the guys that were at the principal's talk, don't raise your hand.
That's a nice house.
That's
outside.
A nice house. But does anybody know what this is? Does it look familiar?
Just one hand right there.
Okay. Winchester House. That's right. It's a Winchester mystery house. But what makes it a mystery? Well, it's been under construction for 38 years. It's had 147 builders and how many architects?
Zero architects.
No architects. So what happens with no architects? You have 160 rooms, 40 bedrooms, 6 kitchens, 2 basements, 950 doors. 65 of those doors go to blank walls.
Now that's interesting.
Yeah, blank walls, you know. 13 staircases abandoned, and then 24 skylights go into floors. So you're not seeing a lot of light in those skylights. No blueprint, no architectural blueprint exists today. Does this remind you of any networks that you might have seen?
Yeah, some old networks that have IPX, XPS, with TCP IP on top.
That's right, NetBuoy, right? And then we put in our NT 3.1,
Token Ring,
4, Token Ring,
Ethernet,
ThickNet. So a lot of changes have happened in the last 20 years, and we've tried to adapt to them. And what happened was our network sort of just grew that way. With private cloud, we have an opportunity of reimagining, re-engineering, and re-architecting our data center so that it is able to provide services to the users of our cloud infrastructure in a way that we want to be able to provide them. Now, it's not just buildings and IT that requires architecture, right? A physician, before procedure and operation, just doesn't like put an X on the back of somebody's head and start drilling. There's a whole bunch of architecture information, a lot of training that goes into the physician's knowledge base before doing that procedure. So they have to learn anatomy and physiology and pharmacology and biochemistry, neuroscience, pathology, and microbiology.
How do you know all that stuff?
How do I know that stuff? Well, before I was in IT, I was a neurologist. So I know that all this background information provided me the definitions and the constraints, telling me what I could and could not do during a procedure, the requirements in order to make the procedure a success, and the key decision points during any particular procedure based on the architectural foundational principles of studying all these subjects and more. The same goes with architecting your private cloud. We just don't want to install bits and make it go. So, Yuri, why don't you tell us a bit about cloud security in general as it applies to both public and private cloud deployments?
Yeah, and so just going back to your previous life as a doctor, mm-hmm. you probably have some security concerns, didn't you?
Sure. If there was a security compromise in the operating theater, someone could die. Or even when we think about health records, significant security issues.
Exactly. And you should trust him because he is a doctor.
Oh, right? That's right.
And he used to be called the Dr. ISA.
Dr. ISA server, that's right.
When we used to live on the edge, now we move to the cloud, and we need to keep our environment secure. So when we talk about some secure concerns that we have, from the cloud perspective, this is very important because it's stopping people to go and move to the cloud and be confident with this move. A lot of secure concerns, and what I want to do right now is just to bring the core concerns related to security and how can we mitigate that. Because many people say, well, cloud and secure does not combine together, and we are here to really say it does. As long as you do the threat and countermeasures, as long as you know the threat landscape and you know how to mitigate that, right? Well, the first thing that we want to take a look here is this screenshot from the darkreading.com. It's a really good website that has some security news. It talks about insecure APIs implementations threaten the cloud. Cloud, when we talk about cloud, a lot of people thought about infrastructure, but it's not only infrastructure, right? If you are developing an application to interact with cloud provider, you need to make sure that you understand the secure model that they are using. If they are using any secure model at all, and how those APIs are secure, how can you interact with those APIs and make your application secure? There is any developer here in the audience? Developers? That's good. We have some developers here. I was expecting more developers, because developers should move also to cloud from the secure standpoint. A lot of developers, they want to understand the language and everything, but they keep making same old mistakes of leaving some holes on the application just because they do not bake in secure with the application itself. When you are moving to the cloud, the extra attention that you should have is the trusting the vendor secure model, right? If you are moving to any vendor, you must
even private cloud,
you must understand what the secure model is, if they have one in place, so you can use, you can adopt. Because today you feel pretty confident with your own secure model. At least I hope you do. If you do not, you probably are working to make some change. You know the hiring procedure with HR. You know how things work on your company. When you are moving to the cloud, even to the private cloud, you need to rethink all of that. And what about if you have a breach and you need to obtain information, like forensics analysis? If you need to visualize those logs, old logs, how the cloud provider will give you that data? That's a question, a key question that you must ask the cloud provider. Okay, I need to do forensics analysis on my data. How long is it going to take for you to give me that data so I can start analyzing? And how deep that information will be to help me analyze? Questions that you should ask to your cloud provider. There is another important point about indirect administration, accountability. Many customers, many professionals, they have a problem understanding what the boundaries are, and they think that when they move to the cloud, they are offline, offloading all the security to the cloud
provider.
That's
right. That's a common, I would say, misconception that's shared in the industry currently.
Yeah, because the fact of the matter is some part of the responsibility will be on cloud provider's hands. But what if the breach occur on your endpoint, right? It's still your endpoint, and you should protect the endpoint. What if the breach occurs in your on-premise network? Because you're still going to have on-premise network. So you must protect those guys. You must keep investing in security on those elements. It's not only about the cloud provider, okay? The second one that we also must be concerned, and I extracted this also from a govinfosecure.com website that talks about a semantic report and from predictions of 2012 security. And one of the predictions that Symantec did, although they said many of the attacks are coming from outside, like Stuxnet and Flames and things like that, the highlights of 2012 attacks will come from inside. So insiders are still a big concern for CEOs, CSOs, because they have access to all the information. Right,
that's
they are
right.
Already authenticated. They are already authorized to use that data.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, it's not only about malicious type of chains on the environment. They might do something just because they do not know what they're doing. They were not training well from the security perspective. Okay, so you must be concerned about that when moving to the cloud. Why? Because you do not handle the security awareness training that your cloud provider is using. You must ask your cloud provider, okay, who is handling my data? What he is doing with my data, who is actually working on the data center, how can I be sure that you are using some secure best practices to secure my data, right? What about on-premise security? Just like I said before, on-premise security is very important. Another huge mistake. People think that cloud is live without walls. Well, cloud without walls means no firewall, so I'm just going to replace my firewall for a router.
That's not happening.
That's not happening. Not a good move. Okay. So the firewall still have the place. We're still gonna have edge. It's just gonna change a little bit. We're gonna talk about that later. Okay. But the on-premise security is very important. Remember, you still have your directory service. You still have your legacy applications. And if you are doing federation, for example, let's say Office 365, you're gonna have your ADFS, your directory service. Authenticating with Office 365, if some breach occur, and compromise your directory service, you're gone. All the secure measures and things that you put in place are gone just because you didn't protect your on-premise resource. Same thing for the endpoint protection. If the breach occurred on the endpoint because you didn't update the antivirus or you disabled the personal firewall, everything is gone. Mm-hmm. So you must protect those things. The third pillar is about some other concerns, and some of these concerns are documented in a very good book called Securing the Cloud. It was published by Syngress. It's a very interesting book. If you have a chance, we recommend. We both read that book. And one of the concerns that we have on this book is about loss of physical control. Loss of physical control in the sense that the customer needs to adapt to this new reality that he's not going to have access to the hardware anymore. He cannot touch the server. Right, he cannot replace.
Can't hug that server.
He cannot hug that server. Say, that's my server, right? You don't have that, you know, anymore. But many times you don't have that today. When you're doing social network, you are putting a lot of information on social networks, and you don't have access to the servers. Since Hotmail, since Gmail, and other mail services, you are not using that model anymore. So that's loss of physical control cannot be perceived as something that should avoid you moving to the cloud. Now, when you're talking to a cloud vendor, you must understand how the physical security works, right?
Even with private cloud, if I'm a business unit, I need to know your security model, right?
Right.
Your physical security model.
And for example, at Microsoft, our data center, one friend of ours, John Weston, he had a chance to go to our data center in San Antonio, Texas, just for a tour, and he told us that it's very hard just to get there, and there's a lot of controls to just go into one of those places.
It's like a military installation.
It's like a safe house, mm-hmm. right? Because he said, well, when I drive outside of the data center, I do not even know there is a data center there because mm-hmm. it's completely different from anything. It's just like a safe house or something that does not have Microsoft there, anything, mm-hmm. right? The other problem that we have on the cloud and from the customer perspective is data leakage, right? Data leakage can occur in three points. When the data is in rest on the cloud data center, that's the vendor's responsibility to keep secure the data center. But data breach also can occur when the data is in transit in between the endpoint and the cloud, and can occur also on premise. So it's not only you say, well, the cloud provider is responsible for avoiding data leakage. No. Again, it's a matter of where the leakage occurred. It was on your on-premise, on your endpoint, or even in transit.
Yes.
Because last year we have a lot of attacks against certificates, right? And one of the things that can happen is Thrive hijacking. Because they have valid certificates, you can have some kind of data leak at that point. That's why we truly believe you still have to have edge protection to do SSL inspection to make sure that it is validating the certificates, because those things will help you on the next thing, which is called defense in depth approach. That's an old terminology, and if you work with security for a long time, you know this terminology for different scenarios. With cloud, we have the same thing. The only difference is that we are covering now from the endpoint to the cloud provider. So we are covering the whole scope of defense in depth. Multiple barriers to
endpoint, private cloud, public cloud, hybrid environment, more complex.
Exactly. And what is the weakest point in this chain?
The end user.
The end user. The end user is the weakest point. Why? Because the end user can take decisions based on what he thinks is correct. He just needs to do an action, a simple action of moving email from a junk mail, put on an inbox, and open an Excel spreadsheet, mm-hmm. and get, boom, a zero-day vulnerability exploited. I know you guys know what I'm talking about, right?
That would be the RSA exploit.
The RSA breach last year was something mm-hmm. like that. So the end user had the power to make this decision just because he sort of understood that email was a false alarm, and he could actually open it. It was interesting. So it was a social engineering type of attack that the user was able to bypass all the security controls. So all the technologies that were in place were gone at that point. What you need to do to combat this is to have a strong security awareness training in place. And it cannot be the old style of secure awareness training that the user will read two paragraphs, start sleeping. Okay, it cannot be bored. Okay, you have to have an active security awareness training. When I say active is, you have to have the scenarios where users can perform actions on those scenarios and evaluate if they understood what a phishing email really is. Okay, what is a virus really is. So you have to make the user to think and not only read paragraphs and click on the checkbox, say, I acknowledge with that. Okay, because this will be just like a EULA, a license agreement, right? F8, next page. Okay, so you need to be more precise on that. Then you have to have secure policies in place. Security policies cannot be only things that you put on a piece of paper just because the auditor said you have to have so, right? It cannot be only to be compliance. You must enforce all the secure policies. And you need to review those policies according to this new cloud model. Okay. Second thing is reinforce the on-premise security. Make sure that you have in place all the controls also to protect your legacy and on-premise assets. Then you are moving towards the cloud. And the next question now is, okay, now it's time for me to choose my cloud vendor, private or public, it doesn't matter. I need to choose what's going to be my vendor. One thing that you must understand is there are different type of business, and some business will require that the data always resides in the U.S., for example, for regulation, right?
Right.
So if the cloud provider says, well, your data will reside in the U.S., but in case of a failure, we're going to move to another country, you probably will say, well, it doesn't matter if you fail your primary data center. I want my data in U.S. only, period. Okay, let's be precise of that even before I sign this contract. So you need to review those things. You need to ask those questions because not all cloud providers will have this capability of keeping the data in U.S. just because of regulatory requirements. Okay?
Absolutely.
The next thing is make sure that your cloud provider has a secure program. If they are offering a set of APIs for you, they are giving those APIs for you so you can develop applications, what are the secure practices they are using? There's any secure development for them?
Mm-hmm.
We do have one, right?
Sure.
We have the SDL. What about other vendors? What are they doing on this perspective to make sure that the APIs that are offering to you are secure from ground zero? So those are the elements from this definition of defense in depth approach from the cloud security.
Very good overview of general ideas about how to deal with several important issues in cloud computing in general. Now let's drill down into some specific concerns and key security differences in private cloud. Now we're not reinventing the security wheel here. All the things that we already know about security in a traditional data center continue to be important and topical and relevant in the private cloud. However, there are a few issues that we may want to refocus our efforts on, and maybe there are a couple of things that are unique about private cloud security. First is cloud security responsibilities. In a traditional data center, the IT group was responsible for security. We didn't turn security over to our end users if we at all could make that happen. I mean, yeah, end-user training is important, but when it comes to the IT infrastructure, we didn't depend upon any users. Well, things change a little bit in the private cloud depending on the service model that we're using. Remember, cloud computing has three service models: infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. So when we look at from the pivot or the perspective of the service model, we see an infrastructure as a service that the provider is responsible for security at the infrastructure layer, which is the networking, compute, and storage that drives the cloud solutions and cloud services. But if we look at the platform and software layers, the consumer of your private cloud resources, the business units and partners that consume your private cloud are responsible for the security at the platform and software layers. So you have to dialogue with your consumers and come up with SLAs to make sure that the areas in which they're responsible for security do not have any hooks or any capabilities to compromise the entire infrastructure that could take down all the services running in the private cloud. Now, if we look at platform as a service, we see that the provider is now responsible for more. So the provider is now responsible for the infrastructure security and the platform security, where we leave the consumer of the cloud services responsible for the software component. And again, we have to have that dialogue with the consumers of our private cloud resources and make sure that they can't compromise either the platform or the infrastructure. Now, if we look at the software as a service model, it's the cloud service provider, which would be you as the operators of the private cloud. You would be responsible for the infrastructure, platform, and software, more like the traditional data center model. Now, in the private cloud, we have to look at security attack types, and because there are so many components in private cloud, we need to be able to decompose all the important components in the private cloud so that we can look at security attack types that are visible at each of these levels. So if we look at the general security in terms of cross-cutting issues in a private cloud, there are things like dictionary attacks and credential theft we need to think about. When we move to the management and operations side of the private cloud, think about credential theft again and luring. At the infrastructure level, we might want to think about how we're going to control physical access and data tampering and elevation of privilege attacks. At the platform, we need to think about data tampering, SQL injection, buffer overflows. Up there at the software level, encryption again, SQL injection, open redirects. At the client side, significant issues around buffer overflows and key loggers. Of course, those key loggers will get you every time. At the service delivery layer, you need to think about cookie replays and spoofing. And down at the provider layer, you've got to worry about credential theft and luring. Now, these attack types are being put on top of what we call the private cloud reference model, and we'll go over that towards the end of the lecture. It helps us organize our thinking about the issues that we need to consider from a security perspective so that we just, try to fit everything into a single box, because different people will be responsible for management and infrastructure and platform and software, service delivery, clients, and providers. There's a good blog post called Cloud Security Threats and Countermeasures at a Glance that I highly recommend. When you download this presentation, just click this link. It'll take you there, and it gives you a very comprehensive list of the security threats that you're going to need to think about. Now, private cloud, private cloud, shared tenant. I thought shared tenants were all about public cloud.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? Because in a private cloud, who are our tenants?
Well, our tenants, a private cloud is defined as a cloud infrastructure that belongs to a single organization. So why would I be concerned about multi-tenancy or shared tenancy?
Well, today, even today on your data center, you still have segmentation. I'm sure y'all using VLANs to segment your network, not only for performance, but also for security.
And even at Microsoft, right?
Yeah, in Microsoft, for example, Windows team and Exchange team and SharePoint, they have segmentations. Not always the SharePoint team wants to share information with Windows and vice versa. We saw that during the development lifecycle of Windows 8,
right? That's right.
Even partnering with the team, we were not able to consume that information just because we didn't have access to it.
Absolutely. So even though with private cloud we use virtualization, business groups tend to silo themselves into different parts of the infrastructure. So the blue group has its own infrastructure, the green group has its own, same with the yellow and the orange. In private cloud, though, we're talking about mobile workloads. They're moving throughout host to host to host in the private cloud environment. So instead of this, the traditional sort of virtualized data center model, we see more of this, where the workloads are running from multiple business units on the same machines that are in the private cloud infrastructure. So we've got these multiple orgs and divisions. Some may be at cross purposes, or some that are a little nervous about sharing infrastructure with the other. So we need some strong logical separation, and that means paying extra attention to authentication, authorization, and access controls. AAA is our friend.
Yep.
Not the automobile service. Another thing we need to think about is virtualization platform. Now, while virtualization is not required for a private cloud, it sure makes it easier to see it happen because it's easier to manage if we use virtualization versus some compute-dense infrastructure and hardware, and it's also a lot cheaper, too. But the virtualization platform has to deal with the fact that our workloads are mobile and that this mobility is automated by the fabric controller. So with this, this mobility, we have a disassociation or an unlinking of the services from the physical infrastructure. And our security tools are trying to play catch-up with this because we have some certain requirements for our security tools in a private cloud. They need to be able to integrate with the private cloud fabric and the private cloud fabric controller because traditionally, in our traditional data centers, we're usually able to home our security monitoring and tools to specific servers that we know are in specific locations, right? With private cloud, that's no longer the case, and we don't have that predictability that we had before.
So the Excel spreadsheet with all the subnets, gone.
That's right. That's not going to work anymore. Our fabric controller now needs to take the place of that Excel spreadsheet and needs to be aware of these changes and not misinterpret them as potential compromise. We also have to provide separate configuration interfaces, too, because the private cloud, you're going to have a lot of people, storage, networking, compute, the platform people, a lot of people need to get their hands into the private cloud configuration consoles. So we have to have separate interfaces for them so they don't step on each other. In addition, we need programmatic, elastic, and on-demand services. Our security controls need to understand that if a virtual machine increases its memory or changes its storage characteristics or its location on the network, that that's not a compromise, that that's expected in a dynamic data center that's based on private cloud. In addition, we have to support policies governing logical attributes. So my favorite here is network virtualization. Network virtualization allows you to move a virtual machine, keeping its IP address so that you can move it to a different data center or a different, within the company campus, or you can move it to Mars if you wanted to, and it would have the same IP address. So we don't have that tight linkage anymore with location. And we have to make sure our security controls are aware that just because it changed its physical location with the same IP address, that that's not a bad thing. And finally, we have to take in the fact that we have to enable trust zones so that no two workloads, there are going to be situations where this guy says this other guy's workload could never be on the same host as mine. And our security control has to work with the fabric controller to make sure that those workloads are never co-located. So, Yuri, why don't you tell us about some private cloud security principles.
So yesterday on his talk, Tom defined principles in the overview in the way
private cloud principles.
Exactly. But now when we are talking about secure principles, the idea of principles is the same as Tom said yesterday. So principles provide general rules and guidelines to support your evolution of secure cloud infrastructure. So the secure principles is something that you build as a foundation of your private cloud. And shouldn't change that much over the years. Maybe some adjustments, but never change dramatically. You're going to change that every other week. Okay? You don't do that with when you are building a house. You build the foundation, that's it. Right? Mm-hmm. It always stay the same foundation, you just do some enhancements. The only time that you have to rebuild the whole foundation is when it was not done correctly or some other type of damage. But the idea is to keep that foundation and bake in security from that point on and never after, right? Secure cannot be a band-aid. You cannot just go to, I need to have this up and running because my boss says so. Well, this is an old approach to things just to make sure that you have that running. You really need to make sure that the securities are in place so that when you build things, it's already secure by design, okay? There are 11 private cloud security principles. And on his talk yesterday, Tom talked about 10 principles, 10 private cloud principles, not secure. But he spent a lot of time talking about this because the presentation was really about this. So we could potentially spend a lot of time on this, but the idea is to give you an overview of those secure principles. So the first one is apply generic secure best practice. You need to understand that when you are building a private cloud, there are many technologies involved, storage, networking, virtualization. And you probably will have security best practices for each one of those technologies separately, but rather about when they integrate it. Right? You should have some best practices on how to integrate those technologies and keep your environment secure. So you need to follow those best practices. You need to enforce isolation. As someone was mentioning, our tenants, our departments must be isolated from one another to avoid any type of data leakage. Security must be a wrapper. You must bake in secure from the foundation, as I was telling before. Never try to add secure after you build the cloud. Chances are that the amount of holes that you will have on your environment will be huge because you didn't think on the potential scenarios. Okay, so the threat landscape will be huge to mitigate.
So it needs to wrap around the entire solution rather than being a Band-Aid.
Exactly. Attackers are authenticated and authorized. So the enemy is within. The enemy is within. It's not only outside. Private cloud, the people that are accessing the private infrastructure, they are internally on your network. So those are the ones that will probably cause harm on your data. Okay? And remember, this happened. And maybe an employee got mad with his boss, and his boss moved from one department to another, and now he wants to sabotage the data or something. He might want to sniff network traffic and try to do traffic hijacking. So you do have the malicious thinking users inside, but you also have the ones that are doing things just because they think it's right, but it's not. The other one is all data locations must be accessible. Remember, with the private cloud, you're going to have no more one only server, but multiple servers that you see as a resource pool. So you're going to pull resource memory from this one, disk from this one. The data will be in different places. How can you keep that whole data secure if they are in different places? Make sure that you address that as well. Use strong cryptography, always that you can. So if you own data in transit, make sure that you have IPsec. When the data is in rest, make sure that you have BitLocker. Right? Make sure that if you are using, for example, SMB, we have a great new feature on Windows Server 2012 called SMB encryption. Mm-hmm. And yesterday we even interviewed the program manager responsible for that, Jose Barreto. Right? Automate secure operations. So automation is very important because as more you automate things, chances are that you are reducing potential human errors when they are doing chains on the environment. So automation is very, very important for you. Okay? Minimize attack services. In other words, hardening servers according to the role. That's a best practice that you should continuously follow. Okay? Limit routing. In the private cloud network, you're going to have routing for different places. You need to limit those routing and make sure that the routes are secure as well. Okay? Audit extensively. And boy, talking about auditing, everyone here probably, just like the market, loves to enable logging.
I love logging.
Yeah, you love logging.
I log everything.
Do you review those logs?
Well, no, but...
Yeah, no one reviews the log, but they want to be enabled, right? But no one goes there to review, to do any kind of investigation. In today's world, what will happen is attackers will try to get in silently and do reconnaissance and do things on your network before you even perceive. And when you go there to review those logs, it's already gone. Right, so it's not only about enabling the log, it's about making sure that you review extensively and auditing those things. Strong governance, risk assessment, and compliance according to your business. And you must make sure that you do that. That leads us to talk about the cloud security challenge secondary to essential characteristics. What is that, Tom?
So in the principles talk, I talked about what the five essential cloud computing characteristics are according to the United States National Institute of Standards and Technology. In order for a cloud solution to be a cloud, whether it's public cloud, private cloud, hybrid cloud, community cloud, or ham sandwich cloud, cloud is cloud, and it should enable five essential characteristics.
And we are going to talk about that.
We're
going to
talk
cloud.
About them within the context. We're going to talk about security within the context of these essential characteristics, which are pooled resources, broad network access, self-service, elasticity, and metered services.
That's right. Let's talk about the first one, which is resource pooling. How you, as an architect, should look at resource pooling. Well, resource pooling, as we define, is a bunch of resources, a bunch of servers that you're going to pull a memory from one, disk from another, and start doing your VMs based on those resources. So there will be multiple eyes looking to those resources, right? Mm-hmm. It will be eyes that are looking to those resources to consume those resources, to search for information, to do good things, to do bad things. It will be all type of users trying to access that data, even malicious users, okay? That's right. What you must do is ask yourself, as a consumer of a private cloud, how can you your application be secure, make sure that no one else can access, and if something untoward occurs, it is still safe. It really boils down to the single statement of, it doesn't matter what happened with your data center, my data must be secure. That's my requirement, okay? One thing that you must control in order to guarantee or to implement this is make sure that you do not have leakage between tenants. In a private cloud, one of the most important things is make sure that the tenants are fully isolated. And Ton just mentioned the AAA before. Authorization, authentication, and access control is really what will allow you to do this isolation correctly. But not only for operators or the people within the cloud, but also for administrators.
That's right.
Because we have different level of administrator. The storage guy might not want to have access to the networking guy's stuff. And you want to isolate roles, isolate privileges according to the role. Okay, so that's how you implement secure on the pooling resource. The second one is about on-demand self-service. So on-demand self-service, that's a dream of IT professionals. Today, how your users are demanding resource. They open a ticket, maybe with help desk, and say, hey, I want a server with this specification, with those software installed. Or they go to a portal and select the option, click on send, and then an email arrives to you. That's not really automation.
No, that's more like mechanized approach.
Yeah, it's not really automation. Automation is you really be doing other things here while the whole system is automated to provisioning, to use, and to release resources on demand. Okay, this is automation on doing things on the fly. The client goes to the portal and automate and say, I want a VM with this resource, with this profile, boom, create is there, available to them. But the problem from the security perspective is, who is authorized to do that? Who has the authority to demand a new service? Who has the authority to provisioning, to use, to release those VMs? Because you might end up with some breaches if you are not doing things correctly. For example, let's say you are provisioning a resource, you use that resource for some time, and then you release that resource. When you release the resource, you as a cloud operator, you should have a process in place that makes sure that that space is clean. All the information that was previous on that VM is fully clean. And you do not want the next tenant to fire up a new VM and be able to see information from the previous one. And this actually happened, right, Tom?
Right. Infrastructure as a service competitor of Microsoft a few months ago recently had a situation where somebody had acquired some VMs and attached them to storage and got their work done and released those resources back into the shared pool. A subsequent customer spun up some VMs, attached it to storage, and voila, we're able to access the data of the previous consumer of the cloud service. So there's a problem with cleanup there.
Yeah. What you need to do is to make sure that your on-demand self-service is error-free in secure provisioning. So you need to test extensively and mitigate this potential problem. Okay? You have to have a cleanup process in place to avoid a scenario mm-hmm. like that. In a public cloud, it's serious, but in private cloud, it's also very serious. Okay? You need to have all those things documented in an SLA. And we should have an SLA for our tenants.
That's right.
So I can provide him and set the expectation on what I can do for them. Mm-hmm. And they know exactly what they will account with me for. What can I do for them? Okay, so SLA is very important. That goes to the next one, which is wrapped elasticity. And this one is very interesting, mainly for the developers. When you talk to the developer about infinite resource, the guy starts smiling really. Oh, my God, that's my dream, to develop an application that can use everything that I want as far as resources. right? So be careful when you talk about developers about rep elasticity. He might think that he can use more memory or more hard disk that they really want to, mm-hmm. right? Just That's because right. the application will be faster. So as an architect of a cloud infrastructure, what you need to understand is you should be concerned about a rogue application that starts using a lot of resources and causes a DOS attack. Can you believe if you do not have security in place that in automation, an application can put down your whole data center just because it was doing using resources without releasing it to the pool? We don't want that. So in order to avoid this type of problem, we need automation. The automation, what the automation will do is when a DOS type of attack is happening and it uses the resource more than it should, the automation should stop that VM to using more resources from different pools, right? And alert not only that administrator, but the owner of that VM that something is happening is going to block the access. You do not want a semi-automation that only send an email to you and say, hey, something is happening, wake up, it's the middle of the night.
That's right.
We don't want that. And make sure that you understand that not all things we have done with evil in mind. It's not the only evil. You have also mm-hmm. some developers that will try to consume resource just because they have resource to use.
And they have the perception of infinite capacity.
Right. The infinite capacity is tricky because you want to give that perception, but you need to control what is going to use. Okay. So make sure that you are monitoring and managing your resources. Make sure that your management system has a policy-based quota,
right.
Okay, like System Center 2012 does have a quota that say, hey, this guy going to use 8 gig of RAM, and you can spend 10% if you need to, and things like that. So you need to create profiles to your tenants. The next one is very interesting. It's about broad network access.
Who are these guys?
They are trying to access the network from outside, right? So we have all type of people trying to access the network from outside. And many cloud architects will say that private cloud has nothing to do with broad network access. And it does, because you're still going to have remote users. The sales guys will be out trying to sell things and make business and try to access the resource from the internal network.
Right.
Right? So they still need to have access to the network. And you also have what? People that will bring their own device.
Right. Right?
Their phone, their tablet, okay, to work with what they have. Okay, so you need to adjust your infrastructure, okay, to allow that to happen in a secure fashion. So as an architect of a private cloud solution, you want to be sure that the appropriate level of security applies regardless of client location and regardless of form factor. Okay, so in order to do that, you need to disassociate the IT of device control and implement that across the board, not only for users that are internally, but also for remote users. And that brings to another very interesting point. It's a really touchy point for me and Tom, because during our whole life, we were on the edge of the network. Tom is getting even emotional at that time, because he built his career on the edge.
That's right.
With a Prox 2.0, as a server, and then now he needs to move to the cloud, and he left the edge. But what happened is, we used to have this well-defined way to create DMZ perimeter network. We knew what it was, internal network, DMZ, three legs network, and things like that. That is changing. We are not saying that you're going to throw your firewall away, okay, because firewall still have a big role on your private clouds. If you look to the right diagram, actually shows that we are multiple layers of firewalls. So it's not that the firewall is going away, it's just changing where you're going to place the firewall. If you notice, for example, on the right diagram, the private cloud is further down, like it was the internal network, and then you have the cloud perimeter,
right.
And then you have the internal client, the internal network.
So the internal network is almost an external network.
Exactly.
Because the concept of trust has changed.
There is no trust in network anymore, right? It used to be called trusted network and untrusted. Well, you trust no one, right? On the private cloud, everyone is suspicious. And you must understand that and address those potential breaches. Mm-hmm. So multiple layers of firewall still applied. And what leads to that is things like IPv6, right? IPv6 really leads to a war with multiple layers. You really do not want to porous border multiple rules on your firewall. With right. time, people start to create so many rules on the firewall to allow this application, that the firewall is a cheese, right? A lot of
That's
holes.
Right. We end up chasing our tails because we're trying to block things, and then we're opening other things. People are tunneling things through SSL, tunneling things through other protocols too, GRE, for example. That becomes a situation in the cost-benefit analysis where we want to put our private cloud infrastructure behind a firewall and start opening things up in front of the private cloud so that our corporate network looks more like an external network than an internal one.
Precisely. And then we have what we should do besides continue to have our firewall on our network is to invest in authenticated attackers. Understand that authenticated attacks will happen because they are internal. It's not only about outside anymore, right? So you need to have other secure controls in place to avoid that happen. And you should understand that there are different client types. Just like we talked before, bring your own device.
BYOD?
Yeah, the BYOD, mm-hmm. like they like to talk about, must address those things. It's not only about PC accessing data anymore. And make sure that you implement your defense-in-depth approach. And the defense-in-depth approach might requires you to have different layers of firewall in your network. That brings us to a private cloud reference model.
All right. So now let's get into a little bit of star charting here, as a friend of mine refers to architecture. But I mean, we got to draw some star charts, or we're not going to know how to steer the enterprise to Alpha Centauri or wherever it's going to go. So first, I didn't know what a reference model even was when I started down this architecture track. You know, I thought maybe it was like a model train set or something like that. But I find out that reference models are actually pretty useful for helping us break down a complex problem like private cloud and private cloud security. So what a reference model is abstract. So we're not talking about anything physical or anything solid that we can put our hands on because we're talking about ideas and concepts. And it allows us to describe entities and ideas and concepts and the relationships between those, such as when we're dealing with private cloud or any other complex system. And it defines and clarifies a problem space like private cloud and then the subspaces within private cloud. Really important at this point is that it be technology agnostic. We don't want to allow technologies to drive our reference model because some of our requirements that we're going to define in the reference model may not have technological solutions at that time. However, if these are requirements, we have to be prepared for the future when we have the technological capabilities to fulfill our requirements. So what can a reference model be used to do? It allows us to create standards for objects within the model. Break down a large problem space in private cloud so we can look at cross-cutting security issues, management, operation, infrastructure, platform, software, service delivery, and client. We can define the concepts and the relationships between those concepts within the various components within our reference model, as we'll see. No, don't look at it yet. create roles and responsibilities for who's responsible for defining the salient issues within each component of the reference model, and then assign those responsibilities to people who have expertise in each of those areas, and compare different things within the reference model so that when we do get to specific software technologies and requirements to solve our security issues in the private cloud, we'll be able to do that because we've defined what the significant problems are and how we might approach solving those problems, and then compare different software solutions based on that understanding. So this is a current version of a continuously changing and evolving private cloud reference model that we're using at this time. We expect it to change because private cloud is a rapidly moving target. And we can see we have broken down the different problem domains within the private cloud. First, we have security, which is a cross-cutting issue, and that's why you see sort of security is in the sort of the light red that's surrounding all the other problem domains within the private cloud. Then we have management and operations. We sort of conflated it here so that we would have more space. But we have the management and operations piece and all the things that we need to address within management and operations. Here in the infrastructure, we do the same. The infrastructure is designed to support the platform layer. The platform layer in the private cloud is designed to help us run the software layer. And the software layer is designed to implement service delivery. And if you were at the Private Cloud Principles talk, we talked about one of the key principles about Private Cloud is that we should take on a service provider's approach. So service delivery is the end game in Private Cloud. Now, if we take this reference model, we can focus on the cross-cutting security issues that apply to all the other areas. These apply to all the other areas. So operations, management, infrastructure, platform, software, and service delivery. We need to think about how are we going to solve problems in identity and access management, data protection, security monitoring, security management, AAA, and also RBAC, role-based access control, auditing, IDS, IPS, and forensics. Now, if we take this reference model and we superimpose security domains that we need to think about, we think about security functionality that cross-cuts everything. We think about infrastructure, platform, software, service delivery, management, client security, and also legal and compliance. Now, if we look at our security model, what we've done is we've taken the Private Cloud reference model and inserted the security problems that we need to solve within the private cloud. So cross-cutting issues such as federation and two-factor auth apply to everything. At the management operations, we might need to think about auditing and quota monitoring.
But this is a work in progress, right?
This is a work in progress, and we have some detailed documents that you can study to dig down into this. At the infrastructure layer, we have to think about guards and fences and disk encryption. At the platform layer, virtual machine monitoring and ACLs, software, antivirus, anti-spam, and authorization. At the service delivery layer, we need to think about protocol restrictions, firewall rules. At the client layer, two-factor auth. And down at provider, smart card and biometrics.
Now this it will be interesting, right? It will be interesting. I know that we are trying to be vendor independent, but if we have something like that maps to the technology.
So what we could do is we could create a technology model that's based on the security model. And Bill Loeffler, a brilliant guy on my team who's in the room today, but I won't point him out to you because he's such a modest guy, has come up with a great article called Mapping Private Cloud Capabilities to the Microsoft Private Cloud Platform, where he does a lot of the technology mappings that allow you to instantiate private cloud using Microsoft products and include some security issues. There's the aka.ms that you can click when you download the presentation. Now, I'm going to take a closer look at a few things here before we finish. I'm going to take a look at the important things you need to think about in terms of virtualization platform, or at least one issue that you need to think about.
Right.
Issues around physical network isolation and logical network isolation. So let's take a look at virtualization or hypervisor security here. So what we have here is we're depicting ring 3 user mode stuff and ring 0 kernel or privilege mode. And so we have, when we install the operating system, we have the device drivers and the Windows kernel running in ring 0. Now, when we install Hyper-V, the Windows hypervisor is actually inserted at a higher privilege level than the device drivers and the Windows kernel, at what we might think of as ring minus 1.
Yeah, although it does not exist.
Doesn't exist, but we want to make it clear that it's running at a higher privilege so that it can intermediate between the device drivers for the host OS and the virtual machines and the physical infrastructure that they need to access in order to provide services. So this microkernel provides an isolation boundary between the various partitions and also provides a minimal trusted computing base that includes no third-party drivers, and that's really important, as we'll see in a little bit. Now, when we install a server core, we get more security because the root partition will allow mediation to all access to the hypervisor and also requires less patching, so it minimizes the overall attack surface. We also see the virtualization stack is in ring 3 non-privileged area. So when we install guest applications, they run in ring 3 user mode non-privileged. Each application gets its own worker process in ring 3 as well. And then the OS kernel run for the guest applications or the guest operating systems, I should say, run at ring zero. And then each application runs its own worker process so they don't step on each other, because that provides us the isolation
right.
that we were talking about earlier that's so critical in a private cloud environment. This prevents guests from interfering with each other. And also, each guest has its own dedicated VM bus channel so that they don't step on each other when they're accessing the hardware. Now, that is the microkernel hypervisor model. There's another model, too, and that's called the monolithic hypervisor. In a monolithic hypervisor, you can see here that the entire virtualization stack is running in privileged mode. This includes the drivers, third-party device drivers. And this can be problematic because this represents a larger code base.
What the interesting is saying about those two models?
From an architectural point of view, we have to think about these things when we're choosing a virtualization platform. Do we feel more comfortable? From a security perspective, we're not talking about functionality sets here now, but from security, do we trust that this larger code base that's harder to security test and has potentially a greater attack surface, do we want that all running in privileged mode at ring zero? And as a matter of fact, a guy named Linus Torvalds, you've heard of him, haven't you?
Yeah,
heard of Linus?
He was the one that made some operating system.
Linux, okay. He had an interesting comment in the linuxfoundation.org where he said, the fact is the absolute last place where you want to see drivers is in a hypervisor. Not only because the added abstraction layer is inevitably a big performance problem, but because hardware and drivers are, by definition, buggier than generic code that can be tested. So Hyper-V is a microkernel hypervisor. Now, other vendors use the monolithic hypervisor, but it's more than a coincidence that Microsoft went with the microkernel. And this, when you're architecting your private clouds and coming up with your private cloud security architectures and designs, you want to consider this and do more research on monolithic versus kernel mode hypervisors. Another thing we want to take a look at is traffic profiles in a private cloud and dealing with isolation in terms of traffic. Essentially, we categorize traffic in two general buckets. First, we have infrastructure traffic. Infrastructure traffic includes a host management network, cluster heartbeat traffic, live migration traffic, and perhaps storage traffic as well. The other bucket is the tenant traffic. This tenant traffic includes all the traffic that's generated to and from the virtual machines that run in the private cloud infrastructure. And it's critically important that we isolate those two general traffic categories, because we do not want the tenant traffic to have any impact and any connectivity to the private cloud infrastructure. So there are a number of things that we can do. We could, on the host of the virtual machines, they typically all support 802.1q VLAN tagging. So what we can do is assign the host traffic and the tenant traffic different VLAN IDs and enforce this across the entire network fabric. We can then use firewalls to permit inter-VLAN traffic per policy. Now, in Windows Server 2012, we have some significant advancements where we can use port ACLs to prevent who can communicate with each other using the Hyper-V virtual switch in Windows Server 2012.
And we have the Hyper-V extensible switch that allows third parties to develop filters like IDS and things like that, malware inspection.
That's right.
To run on their hypervisor.
So we could even plug in something like a Cisco 1000V into the Windows Server 2012 virtual switch and get this kind of isolation at the virtual switch level and not depend upon the physical network as we traditionally have with private clouds in the past. So this provides us the isolation that we need so that we isolate the host from the guests and isolate management traffic from the guest traffic. Now, we can also take advantage of logical network isolation, where we can use host-based firewalls both on the infrastructure machines and also on the tenants, too. Now, it's difficult to enforce this unless you have SLAs with the consumers of your private cloud service. You're going to have to require them to enable firewalls if you decide in your private cloud security architecture and design that you need this level of isolation. by enforcing certain security patterns among the tenant systems. And what we can do here is block all inbound connections to non-essential services. This allows us to deny guest to host traffic and guest to the management systems traffic, and also enables us to centrally manage firewall policy if we choose to use group policy in a primarily Windows environment. We can also take advantage of server and domain isolation where non-domain hosts, so hosts that don't belong to the infrastructure domain, cannot connect to the infrastructure, the host machines, because we can use IPsec server and domain isolation to do that. So only trusted hosts can connect to the infrastructure.
Next steps.
So we talked about a lot of stuff. We had a lot of eye charts. We talked about a lot of concepts. But now it's time to put pedal to the metal and start working on your private cloud design based on a good security architecture. And so we have what we call a solution, not the solution, but a solution for private cloud security that includes three documents that you can download. There's a service blueprint, there's a service design guide, and there's a service operations guide. And these go into a great deal of depth and expand upon what we talked about during this session. And you can find those, you can download those at aka.ms/ZAAG2.
You also have some
announcements.
There's
a new book.
Right? Well,
why don't you tell us about the books?
There is two new books that we want to announce. One probably you are already aware, which is the new Windows Server 2012 book. This one, if you do not have this one, you can go to Microsoft Learning booth
right. And
get one for free. The hard copy, okay? Or you can download also for free from Microsoft Press website. So when you leave here, you can go to Microsoft Learning Center and get one hard copy free. There were, me and Tom, we reviewed chapter 2 of this book, okay, which is the foundation for building your private cloud. So you can read the whole book. It's really good. There are a lot of information there. A lot of PMs wrote sidebars. We did write a sidebar for this chapter. And everything that we talk about, security and other things, are on this chapter as well. Okay, so you can download the PDF version from that URL, or you can get your hard copy on the Microsoft booth. And there is a new announcement also of a Windows Server 2012 secure book. Okay, so this book, me and Tom, we are writing. We are on chapter 6 now.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a new book for Syngress that will cover all the secure stuff related to Windows Server 2012.
As well as private cloud.
As well as private
where
cloud.
Where we get into the details, we'll move from the architecture to the design to the actual setting up security controls within private cloud.
So this is the revealed for the second time, because yesterday we revealed for the first time the front cover.
Mm-hmm.
That's the front cover for the book. It will only be read on Q1 2013. Okay? And it's going to be like 500-600 pages,
yep,
something like that. Yeah, it'll be a big book, a lot of implementations, a lot of the new security features on Windows Server 2012 will be covered on this book. The technical review of this book is Richard Hicks. He's an MVP, and he is right now
delivering a session right now.
Delivering a session, that's why he is not here. Okay. We have also some other resources for the private cloud that you can access, right, Tom?
Right, the Private Cloud Solution Hub, which is a place where our team is working to put together a one-stop shop by the time we're done for architecting, designing, planning, implementing, and managing a private cloud. So check out the Private Cloud Solution Hub at that URL. You can also find a solution for private cloud security on the TetNet Wiki, so you can read it online as well as download it from the gallery.
And
what else do we have here?
Some other related contents. Today we went through a lot of details on the planning, and tomorrow we have a session where we are going to build a private cloud infrastructure using Windows Server 2012 from scratch.
Right, so we're going to do the core storage, networking, and compute.
Right, so this presentation is tomorrow. We have Josh Adams, a PM from Microsoft, that is going to be with us doing the demos. We're going to access our fabric at Microsoft and demonstrate all the steps to you to build the private cloud.
Also, you may want to check out these other sessions on how to secure the private cloud, Office 365, security, privacy, and trust, the four pillars of identity. That's going to be a really good one. I had a chance to review that, and it was a real eye-opener for me because I always had some interest in identity and kind of followed it at the edges, and this one really, really pops up what's important in identity management and cloud infrastructures. We did the private cloud principles one yesterday, so you can check out the recording. And then there's also hybrid computing is the new net norm, which should be particularly interesting. My Tech Ed, Microsoft Learning, TechNet, and MSDN, great places to get more info in general. Complete your evaluation and win an Xbox. Xbox given away every day.
And we have books now.
And books. You don't have to wait to win the Xbox. You don't even have to do an evaluation to win the
book. So for the first book, which is the TMG one, Forefront TMG, the question is about one of the characteristics of cloud computing. In this one in particular, it's about gathering resources from multiple places called resource pooling.
Resource pooling,
right. So one of the things that we discussed here during the presentation is about how to prevent leakage between tenants.
Right.
And we mentioned one approach that you can use. Which approach is that?
Okay, right here.
Now, for this one, we mentioned in particular was, we said triple.
Triple. Hey, who said A? All right.
Two, say, okay.
Two, okay, come on down.
Both. All right.
All right.
The next one is forefront protection for exchange. Forefront protection for exchange. And this one is about wrapped elasticity. Okay? Tell me one way from the ones that we actually were mentioning here to prevent security concerns with wrapped elasticity. There were a lot of points here. Yep.
Policy-based quotas.
Yes.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Then we have the UAG book. I want to ask you about the on-demand self-service. One way that you can secure your on-demand self-service is by implementing what type of process? On the on-demand self-service, there was one in particular that actually Tony gives an example. That was resource pooling. What was?
Cleanup process.
Yep. Cleanup process.
Woo!
Now there is another UAG book here.
You bet.
With the change of the network perimeter creating multiple different layers of firewall, right, we are suggesting what type of approach? Defense in depth.
Defense in depth.
Who said that?
All right. Here. I'll take it down.
You take it?
Yep.
And then we have a TMG book now. And this one probably...
Congrats.
Probably we would know. So if you said something, we're going to just give two books now. It's about the two types of hypervisor. Which one Microsoft used? There were two. The first two, come over here. Tom? I heard two voices saying microkernel. With that...
Where are those voices?
With that, we like to thank you for coming. We are going
there
to the Microsoft Press O'Reilly booth to sign some books. So if you want to talk to us, we'll be there. 3 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of the conference. Hope to see you at our next session where we build out that private cloud infrastructure.